Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell. ESPN, the NFL season is rapidly approaching. It's honestly very upsetting. I thought we had way more off season to go. Sadly, we are just weeks away from the NFL season occurring. I'm not quite sad. I'm actually quite happy. I'm excited for some football. I'm excited to talk about what we're going to see in this upcoming season that is going to change from years past. And some of that, of course, involves the NFL's rules and NFL's officials, which for a brief moment were full-time, at least part of them are full-time, and now that is no longer the case. So joining us to talk about the rule changes for the 2019 season and first talk about the referee situation is going to be the person who covers this very well for us here at ESPN. It is Kevin Seifert. Kevin, how are you?
I'm very good, Bill. How's it going?
I'm good. You are the expert in this space. You are the person who, when you write something about this topic, that initially it immediately becomes my opinion on that topic. And so
awesome.
I have some confusion about the refereeing situation. So let's start there. In terms of the NFL's decision, which came out as we record this shortly after, we're going to release this a little after we are taping it, but the NFL is no longer having a subset of their officials as full-time NFL referees. So what led to that happening in the first place? What led to the decision to make them full-time employees in the first place, or full-time officials in the first place? And what changed to make the NFL decide to have that no longer be the case?
Right. So there has been, you know, for most of the NFL history, referees, kind of a vestige of when this was true for players and coaches as well. When the season was over, referees and all officials had to get another job. You know, they weren't paid during the off season, and so they, you know, they worked. They did football work during the season, and then found other stuff to do during the off season. No different than, unfortunately, at the time, coaches and players.
Right.
And that has changed over time for the coaches and players. But for a couple reasons, the officials remained, at least in terms of, you know, human resources employment status, they were part-time people. They they worked, you know, well beyond 40 hours a week during the season. But in the off season, basically from the Super Bowl to about May 15th was a dark period, you know, according to their CBA, where they were not required nor allowed to do any work for the NFL. And, you know, they liked that arrangement as much as the NFL did, to be honest, because a lot of them had, you know, were doctors or lawyers or, you know, or other jobs that were pretty lucrative and had a chance to make a lot more money than they otherwise would, and also keep their feet in those professions should they, you know, not be renewed or otherwise lose their job with the NFL. So nobody was really unhappy with that forever until it became a little bit of a public narrative that, you know, the NFL was employing part-time officials. And that, you know, again, from a human resources standpoint, accurate, from the amount of work they put in, at least during the season, you know, it's probably better to call them like seasonal workers or, you know, as opposed to year-round workers. But the NFL finally decided to try to implement it. It required negotiation with the NFL Referees Association to alter their CBA, and they came up with this plan where about 20 or so, which represents about 20% of officials, the 122 officials on the roster could apply to become full-time, which would mean that they would be year-round employees of the NFL. They would do their normal stuff during the season. They would be on call to come into the NFL office during the season if there was ever a need to have a discussion or do some you know, longer-term work. And then during the off-season, they would work with the competition committee to develop rule changes that made sense for officials as well, and also visit teams to explain rules and work with teams to help them abide by the rules that had changed or otherwise been in place. And so that went on for 2 years. It meant additional money for those officials who were selected for the program. It still allowed them actually to hold other jobs as long as they prioritized the NFL first. So basically it was just extra money for those guys in return for some extra work. But this summer, as they were beginning discussions on their new collective bargaining agreement, which comes up after the season, the NFL took it off the table and said, we're not going to do it anymore. They did not provide the union with a reason. They have not provided the media with a reason. And it is not entirely clear other than if it was a PR, stance all along, and they had basically succumbed to public pressure to at least have the facade of having full-time officials, then it didn't achieve its goal, which was to improve the PR of officiating, because it's probably never been worse in the NFL. So that's an educated guess, but I don't know that we have a full picture yet for why the NFL abandoned this program.
When the NFL actually appointed this program in the first place, did they give that reasoning publicly as the argument for why they wanted to make full-time officials? Like, what was the public reason for why they decided suddenly to make this change a couple of years ago when it happened in the first place?
Yeah, that it would give – their reasoning publicly was that it would give the officials an opportunity to have additional training and development in the offseason for both themselves and also for teams, that they envisioned, potentially not only having rules, they needed to have an officiating voice in the rules discussion, first of all, so that they didn't come up with rules that officials couldn't officiate. And even though that was an intent, I think they still have had a few of those come out, but that was one of their intents. The other one was to better educate teams in terms of how to be compliant with the rules, so there's not as many penalties during the season. That was something they thought of. And just the general idea that they would have the ability to mandate additional development and training for guys in the off season. They didn't really envision much being different or even say anything would be different during the season, but they thought there was additional work they could do in the off season. There was a lot of dubious officials, within the union who wondered if that was really the case. And the NFL never, there was no public indication that this was for PR, but that was the overriding presumption at the time. And the fact they abandoned it so quickly suggests that it didn't have a very good vision, or they didn't really try to follow through with it.
Do you think the NFL is too sensitive to the public sort of opinion of their referees based on the fact that it seems like they made this gambit and it didn't work, and now they're responding to the fact that the gambit didn't work by giving up on it so quickly?
It would be public / coaches and players too, because it's something we hear a lot from, I know Sean Payton, who's on the competition committee, has been pretty vocal, the Saints coach, about how is it that we have coaches who are working 100 hours a week and players who put in all this time year round, but we have officials who are part time.
Right.
So there, it's been criticism from within and from internal and external that they were receiving. But that the fact that they had 24 out of 122 who were full time didn't seem to assuage that criticism, or didn't mute the criticism. So they, my guess is that, I don't know if they were too sensitive about it, but they reacted to it, and then it didn't do them any good, and it was costing extra money. So maybe they decided to scrap it for that reason. Again, that's an educated guess, but I don't think it had the impact that they had hoped for, at least from a perception standpoint.
Was there was the initial plan to have this as a short-term thing, or was it presented as a, this is a permanent change we're making here at the NFL?
It was officially a yearly annual renewal thing. So the first year, a bunch of people applied. I think about 20 were granted the status. And then, again, everyone had to apply for the second year, and some guys were the same and some guys were different. And then they would have had to apply again this summer. And so it was, I guess for that, in that realm, it was never considered something they would do forever. I don't think that they thought it would be this short, but they did establish that 1 year renewal so that it had to be dealt with on an annual basis.
Maybe I'm just naive. And certainly it feels like the element of public opinion was the biggest driver and biggest motivator for the NFL to make this change a couple of years ago and then to scrap it most recently. But like you mentioned, I mean, there was an era where officials were, of course, making a limited amount of money. And then, like players and coaches, they had part-time jobs during the offseason. That chance for players, a chance for coaches. And referees do have lucrative jobs. So, of course, there's lawyers, doctors, like you said in there. But typically, I mean, this is still a league where we have now a full load of part-time officials. So Is there any reason why, beyond tradition, that the NFL still doesn't have full-time officials on the whole? I mean, is it just that you think the caliber official who they can attract doesn't want to give up their part-time job, or that the money isn't good enough, or the NFL's not willing to pay what it would take for full-time officials? I mean, what is causing this?
You know, I think they could have it if, I mean, maybe it's no different than any business. You can convince any group of employees to do to make a change if it's mm-hmm. if you put enough money behind it.
Right.
You know, there was money being there was all different kinds of discussions at the time, like maybe they should just have the referees, the 17 referees, be full time.
Right.
And I did some reporting on what you would have to pay them, and you'd probably have to pay them double. There is a financial element, and, you know, as much money as the NFL makes and pays out to star players and star coaches, there doesn't seem to be any desire to pay out big money to star or really important officials. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you saw Dean Blandino leave a couple years ago as the chief, you know, the head of officiating for the NFL. And I don't know all the details, but my understanding is that not all of the people who have left mm-hmm. the NFL for TV got more money from TV
right.
to show up on, you know, every Sunday and do some production meetings than they would have if they were working 100 hours a week during the season for the NFL. So there's certainly, I think they could do it if they were willing to pay the money, you know, but it's been, you know, one of the reasons why the NFL Referees Association has not been willing to just say, okay, everybody can be full time is mm-hmm. that it has to be clear they have not been able to achieve that in negotiations.
Right. I'll be back with more of this discussion with Kevin Seifert here on the Bill Barnwell Show in a moment. But first,
guys, I say a great offense starts with a great defense. And that's especially true when it comes to the fuel you put in your car. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline is engineered with 4 levels of defense against gunk, wear, corrosion, and friction to help keep your engine running like new. So now, you and your car have even more reasons to celebrate with the Shell Great Gas Giveaway. It's your chance to win free fuel for a year or one of thousands of prizes with a total prize value of over $1 million. It's a lot of money. If you're a Fuel Rewards member, you'll automatically receive one entry every time you fill up with 8 gallons or more. And if you choose new Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline, you'll get 4 entries. Not a member? Download the Fuel Rewards app or go to fuelrewards.com/win to join. In engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Plus Nitro Premium Gasoline, no purchase is necessary. Promotion ends September 1st, 2019. See official rules at fuelrewards.com/win for how to enter by mail and all details. Now back to the show.
So you mentioned the NFL's Referees Association. And of course, when you think about any reason or any time the NFL makes decisions, my instinct is, well, what's coming up in terms of negotiations? And here we are, of course. We are now, I believe, we're less than a year away from the NFL's yeah. current contract with their officials expiring. That's in May of next year?
Correct.
So do you think, at least to some extent, this is a negotiating ploy with the NFL and in advance of their negotiations with these officials?
You know, I wondered that. I wondered if, you know, the NFL had made a proposal and the union had come back and said, well, you know, we're going to need a lot more money mm-hmm. for those full-time guys. And the NFL said, okay, fine, we'll just scrap it. And, you know, there's two very different modes of thought on that. On the NFL, there's people in the NFL who 100% think that this was shelved for strategic purposes and mm-hmm. it'll be pulled back out as a negotiating term as they get closer to the expiration of the deal. The union people, you know, that I talked to or the people in the officiating community seemed pretty convinced that nothing precipitated it. They didn't ask mm-hmm. for anything. They hadn't really had any substantive talks. It was just, they were just informed we're not doing it this year. And so I, you know, anything's possible in negotiations and there's nothing, the structure's already in place. If they wanted to put it back in for the 2020 season, they certainly could. But and it would be a decent, you know, if they put the right amount of money behind it, it would be a pretty decent negotiating carrot if they wanted to extract something else from the union. But mm-hmm. What we know for sure is that it's not going to exist for this season.
Do you get a sense that the NFL is concerned about the leverage officials might have? I mean, I guess it's tough because you think about the the replacement officials from years ago and what a disaster that was. And it kind of felt like, at least from my perspective, thinking about it then, like, oh, you know, anyone who remembers this is going to justify paying the officials a ton of money because the second tier of officials is so bad. The replacement level officials are horrifically bad relative to the, you know, to the actual NFL officials. I mean, it was the one time I think in my life I've seen officials get applauded. What was that week after the Fail Mary? And now, you know, I think given what's happened in the years since, given that, you know, the most, the dominant image in our head when we think about officials at this point is going to be that blown call in the NFC Championship game, that I wonder whether officials have the same sort of leverage that it might have seemed like they were going to have several years ago.
Yeah, I mean, and that wasn't even replacement level officials. You know, the people, the other thing people forget about that is the, like, the top Division I officials in college wouldn't, you know, they were first approached about replacing the NFL officials, and they wouldn't do it. A, they didn't want to jeopardize the jobs that they had, which, you know, in college, you know, if you're not an NFL official, the next best thing, at least in terms of probably pay and stature, is to be a Division I, you know, big conference college official, and they wouldn't, so they wouldn't take those jobs. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up, they were pulling people from high schools, they were pulling people from the lingerie league, they were pulling people from the arena league, you know, all high school, prep, youth, there was all kinds of, good people, mm-hmm. but unbelievably unqualified for the NFL level. And so that will go down as one of the most unbelievably wild periods of time in recent NFL history for me, mm-hmm. because of how much worse it could have gone. I mean, we talked about the Fail Mary thing, and you know, there was a couple accusations of officials who were, you know, clear fans of teams who were being assigned to the games of those teams, and all the gambling and other associations that could have gone on. But mm-hmm. they it could have been so much worse for them. And so I also see a lot of, you know, even in the weeks after the officials came back that year, people were like, well, you know, I could have, you know, that, what a terrible call by Ed Hockley. We could have, a replacement official couldn't have gotten that any worse. And so I officials, and this is not just in the NFL, but in the world of sports at all levels, are held in such low public esteem, unfortunately, that I don't know if the referees union would have a lot of the public on their side, mm-hmm. if there was some kind of labor confrontation. And that's sorry to say, because, you know, objectively they're the most qualified that are available. You know, mm-hmm. they do make mistakes, but and it wouldn't get any better with another group. But I bet the NFL, you know, in a very cynical way, certainly wouldn't face any public outcry if they stood up strong in a labor negotiation with these officials.
Do you think the NFL is concerned about their ability to retain top level officials? Like you said, the guys who have left for television, they should be, of course. Yeah. But do you think they actually are? Yeah.
I think there are some. I'm hearing more and more people saying that no matter how good your development program is or mm-hmm. how good the pipeline is, that you can't, it's very, the brain drain that has occurred, I think it's 7 in the past 2 years and like 11 since 2014. So the majority of the most experienced and qualified NFL officials, and those are the referees, have departed in the past 5 years or so. And there's been a significant brain drain at a time when rule changes are happening faster than ever. There's no more testing them out in the preseason or in NFL Europe or having, you know, taking 5 years to decide what the catch rule should be or whatever. I mean, owners are getting together in March. They're telling the competition committee, go find a way to make this XYZ happen. And by the end of the summer, they have to write up a rule that can be followed and officiated. And so mm-hmm. these things are happening faster than ever. And the collective experience of the people asked to implement it has gone down considerably. So mm-hmm. I think there's some concern about that. There was concern about whether there was a strong enough development program in the first place, even before all of these people, you know, retired or left or otherwise are gone. Mm-hmm. So I think there's like some smart football people at teams and in the league office who know that I don't want to say it's in a crisis, but know that they there needs to be more continuity than there is, and there needs to be a better pipeline than there is. And what those answers are, I'm not sure if they know or if they're easily can be articulated. Mm-hmm. But I think they're aware that this has been a little bit more than they probably are equipped to absorb.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about some of those new rules that our referees are going to have to implement in 2019, including the new pass interference rules and pass interference challenge opportunities. We'll get to that after the break here in a moment on the Bill Barnwell Show. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm still Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined again by ESPN's Kevin Seifert. We are talking about the officiating possible crisis to come in the NFL, but then also we're talking about the new rules for the 2019 NFL season. I think the most interesting of those rules is the pass interference challenge opportunities related to the Saints game from a year ago. I'll get to that in a moment. Let's talk about, Kevin, the other rules that have come into play here, and I'll just bring them up here. Let's start with the decision to eliminate all blindside blocks.
Yeah, and that actually came from a study they did on punts. If you remember, 2 years ago, they redid the kickoff pretty significantly for safety reasons, and they felt pretty good about the outcome. That the, there was a few more touchbacks, but overall concussions and other injuries went down on kickoff. So they said, okay, after kickoff, the next most important injury-causing play are punts. And they did a study on that and determined that a lot of those punts, a lot of the injuries they were seeing on punts were coming from blindside blocks, some of which were, it was still legal in some situations to do that, to hit somebody from the blind side. And so they basically said, for the sake of punts, but for the sake of everybody, let's just say that I guess the official wording, it's if you initiate a block in which you're moving toward or parallel your own end line and makes forcible contact with the opponent with your helmet, forearm, or shoulder. If you do that any time, whether it's on a punt, special teams, otherwise offense, defense, it's a 15-yard penalty. It used to be legal unless the blocker was contacted, the blocker was contacting the head or the neck area of the opponent. So basically, and it's also aligns them better with the NCAA because that's basically their rule. And so people were coming to the NFL from college and not realizing they could be hit below the neck from a blind side on a punt or other situation, and still be legal. So that was leading to a lot of injuries because a lot of young players and rookies are what's on special teams. So that's why that happened. And that seemed to be, pretty much a fait accompli that anytime there's a safety related or concussion related rule change, that's going to be improved. If at all possible.
So you also mentioned that the similarities between the NFL sort of aligning itself with the college football rules in this aspect. Another place you might see that happening is in terms of the targeting rules, where past, last year, Alberto Riveron, NFL's director, or what is his official title, actually? I don't want to say director of officiating. If it's not
Senior Vice President of Officiating.
Senior Vice President of Officiating. Was able to issue ejections for, it seems like, acts unrelated to football, like, punches that were seen away from the play. He now has the ability also to issue ejections for flagrant football acts, and it seems like the NFL might be getting closer to the NCAA's targeting rules.
Yeah, that one really came under the radar, I think, during the March meeting because everybody was focused on pass interference. But it, as you said, it very much puts him in position to be able if not called targeting, to functionally act the way the NCAA does when it comes to targeting. So last year, there was a handful of times when he called, he was watching a game and somebody, there was a punch and the player might have been penalized, but he wasn't ejected. But if he had the opportunity, he had the ability and the authority to call down to the referee from New York and say, hey, I know you penalized him, but we need to throw him out as well. And so they did that. I remember specifically seeing, I think it was Chris Jones from the Chiefs on a field goal or something, punched a guy, and he got kicked out for that by Al Riveron, not the referee on site. And so that was sort of a minor thing, and it was dating back to the NFL still being mad that Terry McAuley didn't kick out Odell Beckham Jr. when he was fighting with Josh Norman during that game with the Giants and Panthers a few years ago. So that gives him the opportunity to do that. But now, more significantly, if somebody you know, has a really egregious lowering the helmet to initiate contact with another player, or a really egregious blindside block, or a really egregious, you know, football act, mm-hmm. not just a matter of sportsmanship or, you know, or whatever, but if it's a really hard hit and the, you know, the referee has the ability, the authority to kick him out, but he doesn't, then mm-hmm. the NFL can step in real time through Al Riveron and do it themselves. And so we'll see how often they take that option, but that absolutely it's a very subjective thing, you know, how much is too much, you know, what's egregious and what is sort of, you know, a technical violation of the play, but not with the intent to injure, for example. If he judges that somebody was trying to hurt somebody or that somebody clearly could have pulled up and didn't and then put a really big hit on somebody, then you can kick him out of the game. And ejections overall have gone up significantly in the past few years, and it's a pretty understated addition to what goes into winning and losing games, mm-hmm. because if you kick out a certain player who is significant to the outcome of a game, like I think happened last year with Broncos and Lindsey, mm-hmm. he got kicked out of a game and they end up losing because they didn't have their usual offense. It can change the outcome of a game on its own. And so that's why the ejection was traditionally not a big part of NFL officiating, but it's become a bigger one, and mm-hmm. it's going to change outcomes of games, and now they have another way to do it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The NFL made kickoff changes in 2018 and then made those changes permanent for the upcoming season and seasons to follow.
Yeah, and so that basically what people saw last year with the new kickoff in terms of where they were lining up and not being able to get the head start and only allowing or not allowing any wedge blocking and only allowing any double teams mm-hmm. to be affected by people who were already in the back, mm-hmm. not the people who were lined up in the front. Those things all seem to have the effect the NFL wanted. I think they quoted a 38% reduction in concussions mm-hmm. compared to the previous 3-year average. So that's, you know, there was some downsides to it. The onside kick especially seems to be almost a lost cause at this point because you can't get that running start. And the owners rejected a couple of proposals to change the onside kick strategy and rules in the offseason that would have made it easier, but that's neither here nor there. Maybe one year they'll get to that. But I think what we saw last year was made permanent. And that's the way it will be, at least for this season and probably moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. In terms of the onside kick, I mean, obviously the rule changes did sort of mitigate what ability NFL teams had to attempt onside kicks and reduce the success rate of onside kicks, and certainly the expected mm-hmm. onside kicks. The Broncos pitched a alternative to the onside kick that was rejected.
Yeah. So instead of basically each team would have the opportunity one per game to remain on offense after a score in the fourth quarter. Instead of kicking off, they would have lined up at the 35-yard line for basically would have been the same as a 4th and 15. You know, if they had gotten the ball, if you had gotten 15 yards, you maintain possession. But mm-hmm. if not, the defense takes over. The AAF, which everyone's trying to remove from their collective conscious. During their brief and only season, they did outlaw kickoffs entirely, and they gave teams a chance to have 4th and 12, I think, or something along those lines. And it was interesting. It was converted a few times, and a few times it wasn't, but that was sort of what the Broncos modeled their proposal on, but mm-hmm. the owners were not having it, and I guess they're not ready to do that quite yet. Maybe out of fear that if the 4th and 15 idea was really successful, people would want to get rid of kickoffs entirely and just do that every time. So that was put aside. I wouldn't be shocked if it came up again in the mm-hmm. same reduction in onside kick recoveries takes place, but we shall see.
Yeah, I would like it. I'm all for this one. I do see your point. Maybe you limit it to one a game or...
Yeah, you know, or a certain time, only in the fourth quarter, you know, that kind of thing.
I think there are options to make it work. So I hope that ends up becoming a rule. It does not appear to be the case. Other two minor ones, teams can enforce a penalty after an extra point or choose to do it on the kickoff, depending on when certain penalties happen. And then they added 6 tiebreakers ahead of a coin toss for a draft order, which is, I think it's always good to not have to flip a coin for tiebreakers.
That was the official arrival of the draft. We no longer use coin tosses to figure out tiebreaks in the draft. So now it's official. It wasn't before, but now the official is truly, the draft is truly a big deal.
The one really fascinating one to see play out, and I think one that, depending on where you stand on this situation, either seems like it's a long-awaited change in the rules or the first step in a very dangerously slippery slope, is the pass interference rules, where now NFL coaches can challenge pass interference calls before the 2-minute drill or 2-minute warning. Then afterwards, officials will be the ones who will have to trigger the challenge for pass interference. There was some difficulty here, it seemed like, when it came to deciding who was going to actually have to make these challenges, no?
Yeah, the original plan was just to keep it to the structure that exists for all other reviews, which is if you want something reviewed outside of the 2-minute warning of either half or an overtime, the coach has to throw one of his challenge flags. He gets 2, and he gets a 3rd if he gets the first 2 right. And you have to have a timeout for those in order to do that. And then after inside of 2 minutes and in overtime, the replay official in the booth, if he or she sees something that looks like it needs to be reviewed, no matter whether there's a challenge remaining or not, or the coach, that person can stop the game and have a review in New York. And that's done obviously just to make to have better fail safe against a bad call in the final 2 minutes, which is the most important time of either half, affect the outcome of the game. And so that was the plan originally for how pass interference would work. The coaches would challenge it initially, and then the last 2 minutes in an overtime, the replay official would do it. But a understandable concern arose that, how many times are replay officials going to stop the game to see if there was pass interference at a time when most teams are, you know, somebody's probably going to be in a 2-minute drill at least at the end of the game, if not in the end of the second quarter, end of the first half. And you're talking about contact, some level of contact between receivers and defenders on almost every play. So how many times is that guy going to, or that woman going to stop the game in order to, in order just to have the replay? And so then the idea came, well, let's just have the coaches challenge extend only for pass interference. They push back pretty hard. You know, we want to save our timeouts. We want to save our challenges. You know, we're very smart, strategy type guys, and we don't want to have this added on top of our already well thought out and flawless game management perspectives. And so one a good argument I thought they had was that if you were out of challenges, then you still can't stop the type of call that this whole thing was sparked by, which was the NFC Championship game pass interference. So you need to have some kind of fail-safe where, you know, if that play happens, whether or not you have challenges left, we can still reverse the call and make it right, or else this whole exercise is moot. So the NFL said, fine, okay, we'll just do it the way we started, and we'll tell the replay officials that that we want there to be stricter criteria for what causes them to stop a game and on pass interference than they would for any other type penalty. And what that stricter criteria is, no one knows. It's going to be an interesting preseason in that regard, and probably an interesting September as well.
So, of course, it seems like the important thing here is the wording of the penalty. So what are NFL officials going to be looking for to trigger a review here?
Yeah, and so, I mean, the interesting thing is it really doesn't change anything for the on-field officials, because they don't spark, you know, they don't initiate the replay. The person that's really in the crosshairs here is the replay official in the booth. Those are people who come from some technological background. Not many of them have been officials on the field at any level, which is fine when you're a replay official, but a little bit I don't say disqualifying, but a little bit of a stretch of your expertise
right.
to be able to be watching a play live and see if the contact that occurred is worth stopping the game for to review and see if there was pass interference. They told them, or at least they told us, that generally speaking, those replay officials will be asked to use stricter criteria for stopping the game to review pass interference or non-pass interference. Don't forget, this can also apply to when there's no flag, but maybe should have been, as there was in the NFC Championship game. To use stricter criteria to determine whether it's worth stopping the game for. I don't think anyone knows what that stricter criteria is or how that's going to be defined to them, and I think that's going to be the real crux of whether this works or not, is that the NFL has to strike a balance between not reviewing every pass play that happens, because we all know there's some level of contact between pass receivers and defenders at all, you know, on every play.
Right.
But also maintaining some credibility that when there's something really egregious, that they will catch it and stop the game and review it and make the right call. And so that is really that right there. That's the crux of whether this thing is going to work or not, and whether the NFL is going to be able to use it as a gateway to keep expanding replay into other subjective calls, or whether the infrastructure that they have is not capable of handling what needs to be done in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like it's going to be, you know, there's going to be a controversial decision, right? I think it's fair to say at some point. No matter how clear the rule may or may not be.
It could be a controversial decision, or it could be just an enraging fan experience, as I'm sure our friend Dan Graziano was anticipating. I wouldn't want it either. I wouldn't want to be watching a 2-minute drill, you know, December game. I'm trying to think of the December game that's coming up. Chiefs, Patriots, do they play each other this year?
I believe so.
And a game like that, and Patrick Mahomes is trying to take them down the field to tie or win the game. And after every time he throws to Travis Kelce, we have to see if Kelce pushed off or
right.
Kelce got mugged at the line or what, you know. And so that's no fun either. And the NFL knows that. The players know that. The coaches know that. Everyone knows that. But how do you not do that but also maintain the credibility of a program that's supposed to catch the really egregious times as well.
Right. It seems like there should be some balance between, not having anything and having something that prevents a situation similar to the Saints-Rams game from getting, you know, from occurring without any recourse or any penalty. It seems like that there should be some middle ground that makes sense, but it's not quite as easy as that seems. And you brought up Gross, and I was going to actually have him be the next question. Of course, there are going to be people who talk about, you know, whether this is going to slow down the game and that the wording isn't going to be honored. And we're going to be left with teams sort of making desperate attempts to sort of, you know, try and mitigate a big play by just throwing their desperate flag out and hoping that there was some pass interference. Do you think in the long run that just based on your opinion, I mean, do you think this is going to be better for the game, worse for the game, or sort of just it's going to depend?
I think it's going to be net neutral. I think there's going to be times when they save themselves from a much more controversial decision, and there's going to be times when something's going to happen that just defies logic and enrages the world and gives us 3 days of, you know, screaming headlines. and maybe they'll be able to smooth it out over time. Maybe it'll give way to some kind of, like, sky judge. The coaches all want the sky judge. They want somebody to just be up in the booth and buzz down to the ref in real time when something bad has happened and tell them you're wrong, you got to do this instead. And then there's like 5 seconds and everything changes and you're good. And that was what the coaches envisioned. And maybe, and Sean Payton said, I think his quote was, it's going to happen. That will be the future of NFL replay is a sky, smart, maybe a retired referee or somebody sitting up in the press box, noting, you know, when something has been, you know, something small, like if they put the ball on the wrong yard line, or something big, like you missed this guy smacking this other guy on top of the head, and that's the key to efficient mistake corrections. I don't know if that'll ever get enough support from owners, but that's what the coaches want. But in terms of this year, I think it's going to be a net neutral situation. There's not, we will get to the end of the year and point to some good things and some bad things. And then they'll have to decide if there was enough good things and if the bad things weren't bad enough to continue it or just scrap it or tweak it or go to sky judges or what have you.
So what do you think? I mean, do you think it just based on what you think now, based on what you see, how you've seen the league change over the years, do you think this is here to stay? Do you think it's going to be a situation where we get that one bad call and we change things back? Or is it more likely to be, you know, the first step in a series of making things that are not currently challengeable actually challengeable?
Yeah, I think it's more likely that this is the first step and that mm-hmm. it could get rocky, but they'll attribute it to the first year is always rocky and we're just going to keep moving along. Don't forget, replay was introduced in the first go-around from the NFL, and it was there for a while, and then they just played for a long time, and then they put mm-hmm. it back in. And so it's got a history of going through a lot of different conditions and a lot of different, the way people view it has changed dramatically inside the league and as well as outside. But I just think that in this era of sports and the era of technology and the era of higher fan expectations for accuracy, mm-hmm. I don't think that they – can pull back on anything that had a chance to correct bad calls, and whether that's to maintain the sanctity of the game, or it's to fend off government regulators who wonder about the implications with gambling. And Sean Payton went through the example of people. How prevalent, micro gambling is going to be if not in the immediate future, the longer term future where you're betting on every play and, pennies here and, you're on your phone in real time. And like, there has to be, in order for that revenue stream to be successful, there has to be an expectation that things are going to be called fairly. Mm-hmm. And so that in itself is a reason to think that they're going to look for every reason to keep building on this, as opposed to just throwing it out there to show everybody that it doesn't work and then pulling it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kevin, I mean, you do great work covering the NFL for Us on the Whole. You specifically cover a lot of the referee and official related news and rule related news when it comes to the NFL. You do a great job of that. If people want to check out more of your NFL coverage, where can they do that?
I put everything out on Twitter at Seaford ESPN. You can also look on the NFL page over at ESPN.com. It usually ends up there as well.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, thank you so much.
Okay, Bill, thank you.
All right, thanks so much to my guest today, Kevin Seaford of ESPN. We have more football content coming as we prepare for the NFL season. More season preview stuff on the way here on the Bill Barnwell Show.